So here goes the trophy to the 2012 NBA champion, your Miami Heat.
All right, this is the Hot on Hoops podcast, Miami Heat 2012 NBA Championship Edition. Got my writers right here with me, and we're going to go over the series and see what lies ahead with the Heat. How's it going, Diego and Menelik?
It's going great.
All right, well, Diego, you had a question to pose for Menelik about coaching?
Yeah, I mean, on Twitter, I think it was... You know, I think he might have said this during all three of the games in Miami. I don't know. Maybe you can correct me on this. But I think you said quite a few times that you thought that Daquan Cook should have got some more playing time. So, I mean, I guess if you could just talk about that.
Yeah, sure. Basically, I felt like the series really... All right, well, number one, I felt like Spoelstra, I guess starting in the Boston series, he really changed the whole, putting Shane Battier in the starting lineup and then allowing LeBron James to play the four just completely opened up the court because now, you know, and that's something that they never did last year. I mean, they didn't have Shane Battier, but I think it really changed how you got to defend them now because it just created so much more floor spacing. And then when Bosh came back, it was even more because now you had Chalmers, you know, D-Wade, LeBron, Shane, and Bosh. And, everybody on that court could shoot. So I thought that, and if you looked at the way that Miami was defending Oklahoma City throughout those three games, or even four games, really, but I guess we'll just say the three games in Miami, they shrunk the court and they packed the paint. And that's why it was so hard for Durant to get in there. Westbrook found some holes, obviously, in that one game where he was just ridiculous when he had 43. But I just felt like, you know, Derek Fisher, I mean, he's not the Derek Fisher from old. I mean, what is he, 37 years old now? I mean, I just don't understand why, similar to the way James Jones was in jail, and we would joke about how Spo needs to play him, and which he did, and Jones had a good impact in the series. I just thought that, you know, if you're a coach and you have one of the best three-point shooters in the league and you need spacing, wouldn't you want him in the game, and wouldn't that be some sort of adjustment you would make?
I mean, yeah, I think in game three the Thunder made three three-pointers, and in game four they made four. I know that they hit a couple in game five when the game was kind of already out of reach, but I mean, I do agree with you. They were a team that is a very good jump shooting team, but for games three and four, they just had a very tough time making their three-point shots, and maybe Cook would have helped.
Yeah, I mean, if you recall against San Antonio in that big, I believe it was...
game five?
Yeah, game five. They played Daquan Cook for just basically 3 minutes and 55 seconds, and he had he had 8 points, and he had 2 of 2 from downtown. So, and then they talked about, I remember after the game, James Harden and other guys were saying, you know, shout out to Daquan Cook for being the professional he is, to even though he lost his playing time, he came in ready to go. I just thought that's even more of more reasoning to think that he might be able to come in and provide some three-point shooting. So I had to, you know, tweet those comments, and I was blown away as to why he was playing Fisher so much and just not playing anybody else.
And you see also that the Heat, like you were saying, they last year was so different. They were trying to – Spoelstra was trying to shoehorn a true center into that lineup. So if it was Dampierre, if it was even Joel Anthony, and he kind of became an afterthought at the end of this playoff run because, like you were saying, the entire roster, the entire lineup could shoot. So with Bosch there, he accepted that role. One time during the, I think it was before game four, somebody asked him about embracing that role, and he said, yeah, he had been resisting it the first season in Miami, and he just came around to it, and he embraced that role. And Of course, the Heat are going to be better with Bosch back from injury. But plugging him in there, giving Haslam, yeah, exactly, and giving Haslam as well, that frees up minutes for Haslam as well to do his thing. And I saw also in Game 5, just the Heat just wanted him more with those rebounds. It didn't really matter that the Heat were, quote-unquote, playing small. Everybody was crashing the boards, and the Thunder really didn't it wasn't like they were exposing the Heat for doing that, for going small. I hate to say that because LeBron isn't small. Bosch, Haslam, that was enough size for the Thunder. I don't know if that would have worked out against the Spurs, but the Heat with that kind of lineup matched up perfectly with the Thunder.
But if you look at the adjustment that Spoelstra made, and to me it really speaks volumes to why I was criticizing Brook so much. Mm-hmm. Game one, they lose by double digits to the Thunder. Haslam played close to 30 minutes that game, which is pretty much what we've been seeing of, you know, Spo's rotation and his front line. Haslam was in and out the starting lineup. You know, he was playing heavy minutes. After that, Haslam played maybe about, I think the most he played was 16 minutes. 16, 14, 11, and 10.
And strictly as a reserve, yeah.
Yeah, to me, that just showed Spo and the Miami Heat coaching staff said, we're going to go with a small lineup that can shoot better and space the floor. That's what they did. And I think that Brooks never adjusted to that. He never was able to adjust to what Miami did. I mean, because that's pretty big to say, hey, UD, you know, you're one of the captains on our team. You're not going to play as much as you did in the – you know, that's a big adjustment, in my opinion. And Joel Anthony just completely out the rotation.
But what does Brooks have to work with besides Daquan? I mean, that really isn't that bench. I saw them at the warming up. I'm like, I haven't seen any of these players play in a long time. So besides Cook that maybe could have done something. What else can Brooks do? I mean, how could he not play hard in heavy minutes, even if he's struggling?
Well, my problem is Fisher.
Fisher.
So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, just to go off of the whole thing about Haslam getting fewer minutes in this series, I think the Heat basically went with one big man throughout this series. It was Bosch and then Haslam, and I think Haslam was pretty much strictly Bosch's backup. You didn't really see him play with Bosch a lot at all in this series, and I think that really changed the dynamic of this series because Brooks, and, you know, just to go back to his coaching, he stayed with Kendrick Perkins and Serge Ibaka throughout this series, did not change his starting lineup. I thought he should have if he wanted to give his team a better chance. And I think you saw that in Game 5 a couple of times. Bosch just went right past Perkins and then went in for two easy layups. I think one was a layup and the other was a dunk. So I think Miami was really exploiting Perkins with that starting lineup by having Bosch at the 5. And to tell you the truth, I think that Nick Collison was the best big man on his team. I think he played better than Ibaka and Perkins. I mean, Ibaka, he has a jump shot, but he doesn't really use it all that much. And I think with that starting lineup that OKC goes out with, you're pretty much putting a lot of pressure on those two superstars to score because those other three guys aren't giving you a whole lot of offensive production. So I think Collison should have played more, but I also think maybe they should tinker with that roster a bit to try to get some more offensive firepower to take off some of that pressure off of those two superstars that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100% about Nick Collison. I think the majority of America saw that Nick Collison is their most productive big. I mean, he never gets respect. I mean, he's been one of those guys that, you know, he's big in the plus or minus category. Yeah, he's a great role player, you know, but and you bring up another point, Brooks's decision to go with Perkins so much. I mean, that's another question mark. I don't know why you play a guy. I mean, look at this. In the previous series, if you recall, Steve Kerr and Reggie Miller were making fun of Kendrick Perkins, saying he was too slow for San Antonio. And then, you know, and then Perkins turns around, and then remember he starts mocking them and saying, talk about that, because he had a good game two, I think it was, or game three, rather.
Yeah.
So if he's too slow for San Antonio, what do you think he's going to be against the Miami Heat, who are, you know, the most athletic team, or second, or whatever, however you want to put it, with Oklahoma. They're one of the, you know, most athletic teams on the planet. So why would he be playing him 25, 30 minutes? I just don't understand, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it's one thing if Perkins is an offensive threat. Then I get it, you know? Like, if Perkins was a, you know, a 16-8 guy, a guy that can go on the block and you know, and score in the post, then I get it. Okay, he's slow, but at least he can put, you know, Miami's front line in in some, you know, foul trouble or put some pressure on the defense. But all he does is what? Just stand around maybe and, you know, I don't know, send some picks. So I don't really know what the game plan is there with Perkins. I mean, maybe you guys can, I don't know.
I don't know either. I think it was pretty general consensus on, especially on Twitter, I saw that a lot of people were questioning Brooks' decision making. Even Perkins was too. Then he kind of backtracked a little bit. but I think I don't think he agreed with us necessarily. I think he was just questioning Brooks' lineups as well. But I'm assuming he wanted to play even more.
He's questioning his minutes. That's what.
He wanted to play more. He should play all the minutes.
And he wanted to get the ball more down low.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, yeah, I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know what he's thinking.
That the Thunder roster can get better, that they'll learn from these finals. Menelik, do you think that Brooks can do the same thing and apply that towards the future? Or you just think the Thunder should, you know, maybe look at what other options they have as maybe a more veteran coach?
I mean, I never liked Scott Brooks, and I'm glad that my comments about when I joked about his defensive Diego called me out on that, which was funny, but it was true because I didn't look too good when I was making fun of him for putting Thabo Sefolosha on Tony Parker. But I'm glad at least the next round he made me look all right by him, you know, by doing a terrible job in this series. Because I never liked Scott Brooks. I never thought he was that good of a coach. I know he won Coach of the Year, but I've always felt that going back to last year, the way I always kind of analyzed their problems, which people always said that OKC doesn't play right. You know, it wasn't – people never questioned – you know, their talent or their roster. You know, they always said that these guys really don't play right. They're not ready. And I just think that that kind of criticism speaks volumes to the coach, because you can go back to last year when Westbrook was, you know, had his problems and he got benched in one of those playoff series, I think, against Memphis, and he was shooting too much. And even this year, there was more problems. I mean, the coach has to be able to set the tone to say, hey, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, or you should do this, X, Y, and Z, or hey, you got to do this. And I think if there's no accountability on the team, you know, if there's no accountability, players play a little bit more careless and not as responsible with what they're doing. And if you look at, like you said, the rebounding, I don't see how a coach wouldn't be all over his team if they get out-rebounded three straight games. You know, I mean, if you're in the NBA Finals, I know that the players ultimately have to box out and grab the boards, but it didn't seem to me, even in those coaching little audios that we heard on television, I mean, from when I saw it, I didn't hear any speeches from Scott Brooks saying, hey, guys, we got to get some damn rebounds. What's going on? But, like, it was more about, you know, playing hard and playing defense, which is fine. But to me, they lost this series also on boards. And Miami just dominated the boards every single game. So. Yeah.
And I didn't see a whole lot of interior defense. You saw the flashy plays here and there, Ibaka doing a nice block or something like that. But other than that, I thought the Heat had much more resistance against the Pacers and, of course, against the Celtics. I think it was kind of refreshing for them to go against the Thunder.
I agree. And isn't that shocking, considering that OKC was, I think it was, what, the top three defenses in the league? They were up there.
How much would the experience factor into this? The Heat going through what they did last season and applying that towards this finals, and then you got the Thunder. I was kind of shocked at how easily this series ended up becoming. If you just strip away all the storylines and just look at these five games, I think it was. I hesitate to say that it was about as easy as the Knicks, but I think it was definitely a smoother series than even the Pacers one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you take out the second half of Game 1 and the first quarter of Game 4, the Heat just completely outplayed the Thunder. So what is that we're looking at? I mean, basically three quarters of basketball in five games. The Thunder really had an advantage, and the other time that these teams were playing, the Heat were just completely beating them. I mean, I know that they made their runs. They were in the fourth quarter in a lot of games. But I do agree that Miami was the better team. I think everyone admits that now. I mean, I think some people were... I mean, and we talked about this before the series, that the Thunder were the favorites going into this series. But, you know, we could talk about just how good LeBron James was. Bosh going over to the five, playing as a center, helping out on both ends of the floor. That was big. And also getting the contributions of those unsung heroes. I mean, one game it was Shane Battier. Another game it was Mario Chalmers. Then in game five, Mike Miller was just unconscious from the three-point line. So I think all of those things happened to coalesce and make the Heat the world champions. And, you know, I do think that, like I said, you take out three quarters of this series, Miami has been far and away the better team.
Yeah, in and the Thunder would come out flat. They came out flat, even at home. Just starting the games poorly.
Yeah. I think it's a little unfair, though, to say that this was easier than the other series, just only because Chris Bosh was not there. Mm-hmm. If Chris Bosh was there for Indiana and Boston for the full series, and then it still went down the way it did, then no question you're right about that. But Chris Bosh is such an important part of this team, and you know he wasn't around, and it just really impacts them on both ends of the floor. So,
but they weren't shooting as good as they did against the Thunder. That outside shooting, that came around late in the playoff run.
That's true.
That's true. But, I mean, I think that – what are you talking about, three-point shooting or just field goal percentage?
I think overall, just mid-range to – obviously the three-point shooting was incredible, especially in game five.
You're right about that. They weren't shooting that great. But, you know, but when they didn't have Chris Bosh, they struggled, you know, immensely to be able to, you know, to score consistently because they just didn't have that kind of, you know, 20-foot – pick and roll big threat that Chris Bosh provides. I mean, he really causes so many problems, even when he doesn't do anything, even when he's just standing there, because then you have to worry about him. And many times in that fourth quarter, too, against the Thunder, D Wade and Chris Bosh ran some pretty good high pick and rolls. I think it was game four, game three, maybe, I don't know, I think it was game three, actually, when, you know, it was a high pick and roll, Bosh would slide and they would get, he got fouled or he would score. So Bosh was all over this series, you know. And I just think also, going back to further elaborate, I mean, look at the coaches. I think Frank Vogel and Doc Rivers are better coaches than Scott Brooks, in my opinion. So, and I think that they were making better defensive adjustments, better game-by-game adjustments, where it looked like Brooks didn't have any adjustment. I mean, and that's why I kind of laughed at it in the Western Conference Finals, because his adjustment was, well, I'm going to put Durant on Chalmers and put Thabo on LeBron. And those are those kind of defensive rotating adjustments don't really require that much effort. Okay, you guard him now. You guard him now. Cool. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what else are you really doing? And if you look at game five, and to me, it was a little bit just almost laughable what their adjustment was. We're going to just run at LeBron and double him? I mean, why don't you just, I mean, the guy is one of the best passers we've ever seen. That's what he wants to do. He wants to pass the ball. So you're going to just throw defenders at him barbarically when he has the ball and then make him make a play? I mean, he's not Kobe Bryant. He's going to pass the ball extremely efficiently. Like, he's going to, I love Kobe Bryant, but I'm just saying, in other words, that's LeBron's game. He's a point forward. So I just think that Scott Brooks really was not doing anything that made it, he was not making any adjustments to me that could have made the series closer. And Spo did what he had to do to just take over this series. Miami went out, and I think that's the main difference between the earlier rounds and this round.
And wasn't it incredible that LeBron won it his way with the triple double, and not scoring 40 like Kobe? And I totally respect Kobe's game, but LeBron isn't like that. He's not that kind of player. He let the game come to him. He was in the flow of the entire series, but in that game five, it was just masterful. Some of those passes that he made were just so precise. And all this talk about whether Durant is the best player or not, I mean, I think LeBron just gave a clinic, really, in how to dominate a series on both ends of the floor. And I was disappointed in Durant guarding Chalmers. He cannot be considered one of the best players or the best player in the NBA. And you have to be hidden on defense in the finals. That's inexcusable.
Yeah. No, that's a joke. Especially also his one-on-one defense really disappointed me.
Yeah, he still got into foul trouble.
You could see he's inexperienced. He just reaches in. I mean, the guy, you see how many times the guy just throws his hands around and reaches in? He doesn't really move his feet. He doesn't really play good on ball. He just reaches. I mean, you're going to get fouls like that.
Yeah, and I mean, just to go off of what you were saying earlier, I think that, you know, in this series, it was Michael Jordan and Clyde Drexler. I mean, people were saying going into that series, you know, maybe Drexler is as good as Jordan, but I think he proved that LeBron James is by far, when you look at offense and defense, passing and rebounding, there is no comparison. If you want to compare just their offensive games, yes, Durant is a better shooter, no question. And another thing, the Thunder's defense, I know that, I mean, they did double team James a lot, but their defensive rotation were just terrible. I mean, on one play, Mario Chalmers brings the ball up court and walks into a three-point shot. Nobody goes out to guard him. And I think it was after a made basket and you don't match up well, Mario Chalmers walks into a three-point shot wide open. That's just inexcusable in an elimination game. I mean, you can't have your point guard, after you make a basket, nobody picks up your point guard and he just walks into a three-point shot wide open. Inexcusable.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, Diego, I mean, I know this kind of doesn't make much sense, but how do you think LeBron would have been able to play offensively if he had to play against that Miami Heat defense? I mean, I'm not just playing devil's advocate here. Yeah. I do think LeBron's a better player, but I do think Durant's a better offensive player. But I just think that, to your point, I mean, there was no comparison. Oklahoma City's defense was pathetic compared to Miami. I mean, the Heat were everywhere. I mean, they packed the paint. They got in the passing lane. They were deflecting balls, blocking. I mean, it was, if you looked at that half-court set, there was nowhere for anybody to go.
Well, Westbrook had plenty of opportunities to just dribble up the court and do that little, you know, mid-range pull-up jumper. He had that all the time. So that was, maybe that was the only thing that I didn't really understand. It was kind of like a, not as much of a spacing as Rondo got, but it was kind of like that. They kind of gave him a little bit of free reign to do that little jumper. It obviously worked in game four, that little move. And he was getting to the basket pretty easily. I think Westbrook was really, they really didn't have much of an answer for Westbrook, but if they were going to get killed by him and Durant shooting jumpers, they were going to live with that. They didn't have anybody else to consistently count on. And I don't know what happened to Harden. I guess you could...
He missed a lot of open shots.
A lot of things that were just popping in and out.
Yeah,
too.
Diego, you got to admit that. He missed a lot of open... I was, you know, I like him a lot, so I was trying to defend him. But he did... I just felt like I never saw so many shots rim in and out for someone in a in a series. It just kept rimming in and out.
Yeah.
But going back to what you were saying, I just want to say 100% I agree that LeBron James proved he's the best player in the world. But I still think Durant is the best offensive player in the world, just simply because as much as Miami did in this series to just negate him and shut him down, which they did, he still averaged 31 points on like 55% shooting. That's insane. That's insane. You know, that's just nuts to me. And I'm just saying his percentage efficiency and it's so easy for him to score. I just think that in terms of scoring, maybe not offensive, but in terms of scoring, there's no one in this league that can do it better than he can.
Well, you seem to think that the Thunder win in spite of Brooks, not because of him, or it doesn't really help whole lot. See them going back next year to the finals with the West the way it is? And do you think the Heat have a clear path with, you know, Rose? You know, hopefully, we don't wish any long term effects on him, but hopefully he's back healthy and the Bulls are back and healthy. We got a lot of question marks with the Celtics. And What do you guys think? Is this going to be a rivalry that we're going to see in many years to come?
Well, I think Do you want to go ahead?
Oh, no. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think that we can I would say we can pencil in the Heat and the Thunder for next year's finals because they are going to have their four best players, you know, Westbrook, KD, Harden, and Ibaka. They're going to have all four of those guys next year at least. And I think that when you look at, you know, maybe Dallas can bring in Darren Williams, maybe the Lakers can make a move, but I would still put them in as the favorites, at least right now, going into the season. But, I mean, after that, I mean, I am very skeptical of how what they're going to do to keep those two guys who still have not signed their extensions from their rookie deals, those being Harden and Ibaka, because I look at, you know, some of the guys. I mean, Joe Johnson got a max-level contract, you know, a couple of years ago, and I think some people would say that Harden could be a better player than Joe Johnson. And I mean, you look at Serge Ibaka. I mean, DeAndre Jordan is getting paid $10 million this year. So I think people are going to throw money at those two guys, and it'll be interesting to see what Sam Presti does. You know, does he trade one of them to get something in return for his team? But I would say, for next year, I think we can pencil them in. And as far as the East goes, the only thing, I think Derrick Rose, I think his injury that he sustained in the first round, I heard that that's an 8 to 12 month recovery time injury. So does he come back in the middle of the season? Does he come back in the All-Star game? That's a big question. I heard that Kevin Garnett is contemplating riding off into the sunset. If they do not get Kevin Garnett back, I wouldn't really put them in that contending Eastern Conference category. But the one thing in the East that I would say may worry you is if the Brooklyn Nets can get Darren Williams and Dwight Howard. If they get those two guys, then that could be a threat to the Heat in the East. But other than that, I think that we can definitely pencil these two teams into the finals for next year.
I don't think that's enough, though. I mean, even if they got Darren Williams and Dwight Howard, I mean, there's, you know, you still have to fill in a roster with, you know, role players and, you know, and good guys that play defense and play physical. And no, yeah. I just don't think – I can't see them, even with Darren Williams and Dwight Howard, all of a sudden being title contenders better than the Heat. I just – you know, I can't. Now, what do you guys think if the Knicks get, like, Steve Nash? You think that makes their team any –
I think we're talking about teams that will be playoff teams because really you only have to play barely 500 ball to get in. And I think, you know, maybe the Nets, maybe the Celtics can get into the second round, but I think that's about it. That's as high as their ceiling is, honestly. I just see it's really the Heat and the Bulls. And like Diego said, we really don't know what Rose will be like when he gets back on the floor. We don't know when he'll be back on the floor. And even when he was on the floor and he was perfectly healthy, the Heat took care of them in five games last year.
You don't think if the Knicks got Nash, though, they'd be just as good as the Bulls?
I don't know if Nash wants to go to a team where he'll just stand in the corner while Carmelo Anthony just dribbles and shoots. I think Steve Nash said that he would consider signing with the Heat. I think that would be an interesting thing if he were to go to the Heat. And I think that would be good. I mean, this is really looking ahead, but if he goes to the Heat, I think you can really put Wade and James on the bench for extended portions of these games in the regular season and then just go to the pick and roll with Bosch and Nash. I think that would work perfectly in a second unit type of lineup that the Heat would go to, and you could rest your two best players. I think if Nash goes to the Heat, I think he said that he would consider joining the Heat, and he respects a lot of the players. If he were to go there, I think that would be a really good signing for the Heat. But we have to see if he's willing to take the mid-level exception, which is $3 million per year. So I don't know if he'll take it, but we have to see.
Menelik, you don't think that Mike Bibby is enough for the Knicks? I'm surprised.
Yeah, Mike Bibby. But Tony Douglas, he's an all-star lock-in. What else you got? I mean, Lynn. Jesus. What?
Lynn.
That team.
Yeah, Lynn. There you go.
Lynn.
Oh, yeah, Lynn. You know, I was never a big fan of Jeremy Lin, to be honest, but I mean, he had a remarkable story. Yeah, I always thought he was really overrated, but he had a great, great year. Great story.
All right, speaking of great years, LeBron James, let's get back on track with the finals. What did he do from last year to this year's finals? Did you see a marked improvement, or simply just him just being focused, letting the game come to him? And just playing the way he is capable of playing? Or did you see him just taking it to another level and playing at a level that you'd never seen him play before?
Well, I think after the game, after game five, he said that losing to Dallas in the finals last year was the best thing that's ever happened to him because of how it made him go back to the basics. And I really do agree with that. I think he was spot on because we saw this year he really developed a post game. I think James Harden, Cephalosha, those guys had no chance against James in the post. I mean, I think you saw in the Dallas series from last year, Jason Kidd was guarding him at times, and James would just take a couple of, you know, fadeaway jump shots. So I do think that he did develop his game. I don't think we saw him with the post game that he had on his play, especially in game four, whether it was scoring or dishing out from the post to wide open 3-point shooters. I think he really did step it up. And I think at this point, it just goes from the question is now is can he get it done? But now it's how many can he get? Because I think that he really just developed his game. I think that the only hole that you could say that is in his game right now is his inconsistent jump shot. But I don't see any other hole in his game other than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think you have to start with his summer with Hakeem Olajuwon and his, you know, desire to get on the block or the high, you know, the high post and post up. That's to me the biggest difference from last year or any other year he's played in this league. So, sky's the limit now. If he can relish that, you know, that post up role, he never wanted to, you know, be in the post. He never liked it. He wanted to be, you know, top of the key. Right or left wing, you know, high pick and roll, isolation. And he's more of a, you know, on the go kind of player. So, yeah, he made the transition. It looks great right now, and the sky's the limit. I will say that I was also surprised, though, that the Thunder didn't run any zone to take him out of the post because he, like you said, he was just destroying those guys. You know, he's too strong. You can't guard him. You just can't.
Yeah, and I see an evolution in him as a player, as a man. But I think also, and I don't want to disparage the Cavs organization, but I don't know how much they pushed him to be a better player, to add those kind of skills. I don't know. I wasn't there, obviously. I don't know what they worked on at practice, or they just simply let him do his thing. Obviously, he's such a good player. He's such a natural talent and a skill set. Of course he's going to play good. Of course he's going to play brilliantly in many great moments as a Cavalier, but I think just pushing him to be a better player and to have that kind of guidance that Pat Riley has, and it's a proven formula. But you have to listen to this Heat organization. They had won a championship already. I think that was the reason why he was interested in coming down to Miami. That other teams in free agency did not have that kind of a pitch to sell LeBron James on. So I think it all came together, I think in the first year as well. I think it was kind of silly to say that the big three formula doesn't work if they don't win this year. I mean, they had already gone to the finals and they had a very bad stretch of games, and the Mavericks played very well. You got to give them credit too. And I think that it was special also that not only did LeBron play good, but the whole team did. And he didn't have to carry this team. They didn't need 40 points from him. They didn't need a spectacular basket at the end of it or even overtime to beat the Thunder. I think with Shane's contributions, Miller, nobody expected that to happen in the last game as well. So I think it all came together. you know, we're not even really talking much about Dwayne Wade at all in this podcast. And that's somebody that it's absurd to think that, right? From 2006, even all the way up to the year before LeBron and Bosch came in. I mean, the Heat had to depend on Wade for everything, especially in the playoffs. And now you have that luxury almost to just count on Wade to make a spectacular basket, and then you have LeBron doing something in the next possession. So I think it was just a total team effort, magnified as well by LeBron's brilliance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as far as Wade, I think that you can make a case that Bosch was the second best player for the Heat in this series. I mean, and that's not to take anything away from Wade. I think he's a great player, obviously the top player in Heat history. Right now, I think maybe James could catch him. But I think he had the knee injury in the playoffs. Obviously, looked like very bad in Game 3 of that Pacers series. He came around for a couple games, but then in the Celtics series, really only showed up for the second half of pretty much all those games. Was a little bit better in this series. Not really the D Wade that we know, but I think, I mean, some people are talking about he's getting older. I think he can still maybe ride out his contract if he's a guy who can make, you know, hard cuts to the basket when James has the ball, when Bosch has the ball. I think, and you know, out of all of the players on the Heat, he had the most block shots out of anyone. And I think that just speaks to the versatility that we talked about earlier with Bosch at the five, James at the four. You're basically starting two small forwards in Battier and James. So, I mean, I think he did have, I mean, he was hurt during this finals run, but I would expect him to be, I probably would expect him to sit out the London games this summer and then just come back stronger next year. And I would expect him to be better next year in the playoffs than he was this year. But, I mean, he still did enough to be part of a big three and help some pressure off of James and Bosch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was fully healthy, but a lot of people aren't, you know, like everybody was saying, no one's really healthy around this time. But I think he didn't get enough credit this postseason. He had a lot of great games. A lot of great games in that Pacers series, although he did struggle, of course, before that game three. And just I think his defense was so good. You know, I think his offense took a hit, but his defense was so good. If you look at, like you pointed to, his block shots, closing out the shooters. I think Jeff Van Gundy highlighted that in the last game or the game before, where he closed out the drive and then was able, I think it was game four, he closed out the drive and then was able to run back out and some, I think, block Cephalosha's three at the end of the game.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, his defense was all over the place. He's so good defensively. So I think that his offense certainly took a hit in terms of what we're used to. But I think a great deal of that is also him just turning the keys over to LeBron and having LeBron be the orchestrator. You know, your numbers are going to take a hit like that. But I just think he did a great job of playing off the ball, something that great players can't always do, you know, fill the passing lanes and, you know, move off the ball and get open and play good defense. And he didn't complain once, you know. And I think he deserves more credit for that, just, you know, to be as a man and as a superstar to be able to, you know, share and give a team to someone else, so to speak, and then also still give maximum effort. So, you know, kudos to Wade.
Definitely. Yeah. Kudos to the whole team. We're going to wrap it up for today, but we have so many topics to go over. We could still talk about the NBA Finals, really. I mean, there's so much left to discuss, but we also have the future to discuss in the next podcast. What's going to happen with Mike Miller? What will the Heat do with free agency? Are they going to do anything in the NBA draft? They have the number 27 pick. So we're going to have a lot to discuss over the offseason. Thanks a lot for coming on with me to discuss the finals, and we'll definitely talk again for all these other topics.
Yeah.
Sounds all good.
Right. See ya.
Thanks, Siri.
Right, yeah, man.
Yeah, guys.
Later. I
can feel the fire. And I'd like to ask your permission. Can we have a party tonight? Is it okay to have a party tonight? That's all I want to know.